Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, coming to you on the night that 10,000 fans returned to Carrow Road and saw Norwich City beat Gillingham 5-0, getting a very much needed boost in pre-season because it's been a strange and difficult, well, you could say 10 days. Could say 18 months, but they did win the championship title during that time as well. Dave Freezer here, sat alongside Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell to discuss that pre-season friendly. And Pad, if I come to you first, lots to enjoy tonight, wasn't there?
Certainly was, Dave. Yeah, mainly taking your lead there, having those fans back. For me, that felt like a football game tonight.
Yeah.
I said to Connor on the team news thing we do before the game, you know, we're all privileged that we, during this 18 months, have by and large been able to come to these games and still cover them in a professional capacity. But when you're in that environment tonight, and, you know, even when, you know, Tim Krul, when he came out with the keepers, there was a huge roar and it didn't feel like a pre-season friendly. And then when Ben Gibson led them out just before kick-off again, and then Lees Malou's first goal of the night, and it popped into my head that for a lot of those 10,500 fans, that was probably the first live goal they've seen at Carrow Road, probably since Jamal Lewis whacked that goal in against Leicester, which was February 2020, the last full house here prior to the pandemic. And, you know, what a world we've all inhabited since then. But just, you know, as we've said many times, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, football is fairly immaterial, but it does matter, and it mattered to those. I'm sure those fans have gone home tonight. We're sat here in the press room still, so
the new press room, refurbished press room.
Very nice it is too, Dave. Yeah, but I'm sure those fans have gone home tonight, and not simply because they've seen their team win 5-0, but just the cathartic experience of being back at Carrow Road. You know, they'll be on a high, and we spoke to Daniel after the game, and he acknowledged that, which is why he went out after the game and did his now customary all four sides of the ground double hand salute, orchestrating the crowd. And as he said, he wouldn't normally do that for a pre-season game, but it felt, the occasion felt like it merited it, and it was special. But for me, I mean, that's just a taste of what it's going to be like, hopefully, in 12 days time when Liverpool are here, because that will be a full house, hopefully.
Yeah, too right. I mean, even the fact that the three of us are sat here just talking like this, we haven't done this for quite a long time, have we? You know, the pod has generally been over video calls and whatnot. So it's quite nice that, to have that feeling of a normality coming back. You know, there's still that little bit in the back of my head that just doesn't want to let myself get carried away with it, because we all know that we're not quite out of the woods yet, are we, and things like that. But let's not get into sort of COVID matters too much, because we will have to come back round to that in terms of the impact it's had on the squad and looking ahead to Newcastle and stuff. But we'll come back round to that and give you the sort of the full details and names and things like that that it's been affecting in the Norwich squad. But yeah, Connor, in terms of how well this night could have gone, just about ticked every box, didn't it? And they really did need it after what has been a difficult 10 days for Daniel and the players.
Yeah, and I think everyone's been feeling a little bit flat, or certainly that's how I've gauged the temperature on social media, and kind of understandably so. I guess the transfer activity is perceived to have slowed down slightly. They've lost key people in key positions, which I think if it's one or two is probably maybe swept under the carpet, but when there's a few more, people start to read maybe more into those matters than perhaps there is, and it all contributes to a feeling amongst the fan base which was probably one of frustration, one a little bit of concern. I think after promotion, everyone wants it to be merry and jolly, and obviously the fans coming back to tonight, and I think the mood has shifted subsequently after tonight and the performance they put on, albeit against a League One side. But it did feel like this was a night really to kind of lay down the markers and to show what they could do, particularly the two additions in midfield, Gilmore and Lee Malou, who I thought were pretty good. Again, with the caveat being that it is pre-season. So I think it was necessary in terms of shifting the move and shifting the narrative on. Obviously, we've had the COVID stuff as well. And yeah, I think most Norwich fans would have who were in attendance tonight at least would have left with a big smile on their face, just coming back, seeing their team scoring goals. I mean, the Lucas Rupp's goal, which was the third, wasn't it? Was exquisite. That was probably worth the money that they paid alone in terms of how it was crafted. And I think it will maybe inject some positivity in what has been a pretty tough 10 days. And just to go back what we were talking about before about fans returning, I was thinking actually as I was sat in the press box, kind of the difference between what we've been used to in terms of games behind closed doors. And, you know, it's not a complaint because we've been privileged to be there, but just in terms of processes in getting in the ground, we used to have to hand in a bit of paper and have our temperature checked. And it felt a little bit like an airport check-in, didn't it, to get into the ground. And tonight it wasn't like that. And as Paddy summed up, well, brilliantly, really, it felt like a football game. And it was really enjoyable. And that really, I think, was the big take of the evening, the fans and how enjoyable and how positive it was to have them back.
It certainly was, and there was lots to enjoy on the pitch as well. So if we just go through the actual game sort of chronologically, really, the team, Tim Krul in goal, Aaron's at right back, Yanulis at left back in sort of a 4-3-2-1 sort of shape, come 4-3-3, I suppose. But Ben Gibson back after his injury alongside Andrew Omobamadeli in central defence. Then you had Lucas Rupp, Billy Gilmore and Lisa Malou as the central midfielders. Gilmore just a little bit deeper as sort of the anchor role. And then Camwell and Dowell as attacking midfielders in support of Ida. And you very much saw Yanulis and Aaron's bombing on to provide the width, really. And Connor's hinted at it there a bit, Pad. You know, this is pre-season anyway, so you don't read too much into pre-season full stop. But this was a Gillingham team missing five or six players who would have been in contention, or they hope will be in contention, for their League One opener against Lincoln on Saturday. So it was sort of a strangely timed game for them as well. They had a couple of trialists in the team, so we have to be a little bit cautious. But Pierre-Lys Malou was certainly the one that I think most people were talking about in the first half, maybe along with Gilmore as well. But he looked pretty classy, didn't he?
Yeah, very languid sort of his style. He just looks to have a lot of time on the ball. And they always say, don't they, that's the hallmark of a very good player. Mm. But it is hard to benchmark against, no disrespect to not even Gillingham's first 11. There was a sparring partner sort of mentality, I felt, to that game tonight, that it was really attack versus defence. They did hit the bar, obviously, in the first half, and that was as close as they can. But
that would have been 1-1 as well, wouldn't it?
It would at that point, yeah. But, you know, I don't think 5-0 flattered Norwich, really. It was attack v defence. And in that environment, I thought Yanulis was a standout, going bombing down the left. And as Connor rightly said, you know, he played a key role in Lucas Rupp's goal. But you'd want to reserve judgment on anything you've seen tonight, particularly until Newcastle, you would hope, would be another serious step up on Saturday, the final pre-season game. But that midfield, yeah, you refer to there, I think Gilmore shows what he's all about again. It is hard to keep the hype under wraps with him, because you see the quality that the lad's got, and also the maturity. You know, there was a couple of occasions in the first half he wasn't happy with the runs and the options maybe the players ahead of him were giving him when he got his head up, and he wasn't slow to tell them as well. And for a 20-year-old, you know, it just shows, you know, what a special talent he is, and that he's got the temperament with the talent, clearly. And I like that blend already. You know, Rupp and almost Lys Malou are his minders, and he has the protection to quarterback it almost and set the tempo. But also, you know, there was two or three occasions in that first half he broke into the box and a couple of better finishes, and he's getting on the score sheet. So that was good to see, because I don't think if you've not watched a lot of him, you would necessarily associate that attacking dimension to his game. So that could be a positive moving forward. But that looked a nice blend there. And, of course, Kenny McLean came on after quite a serious knee injury that, you know, ruled him out of the Euros, sadly, for Scotland. But came on, got 30 minutes, and he will be in that conversation as well. So my takeaway from tonight, looking at that, allowing for the level of opposition, was that midfield three. Because, as Daniel said when we spoke to him after the game, you know, that's probably the area of the squad where the biggest amount of work needed doing, with Ollie Skip going back to Tottenham and Tete and obviously Mario Vrančić leaving as well over the summer. Marcus Stieperman, you could add to that mix as well. They needed to address that area, and certainly in Gilmore and Lys Malou, and hopefully maybe one more addition if they get it over the line between now and the end of August. It's looking quite healthy now, that midfield area, and it needs to be, because I think we all would agree that that's going to be a key area in terms of how well they do in the Premier League.
Absolutely. And I say that Gillingham could have made it 1-1, but, you know, Gilmore had gone close twice, hadn't he? You know, fired one just wide of the far post, one just over the bar. Norwich had quite a few chances, so they would have been lucky to get back to 1-1. But within a minute of that, it was 2-0, wasn't it? Adam Eder getting the goal in the 36th minute from a lovely assist from Todd Cantwell, who ended up with three assists in the end tonight. And he's enjoyed pre-season, hasn't he? You know, the pressure is off. We saw quite a bit of showboating from him at King's Inn and stuff, didn't he? But, yeah, I thought in the end, although Lees Malou sort of started off like a train, and I agree, Yiannoulis was very good. I think Todd was probably the sort of the star of the show, probably.
Yeah, I remember when we were at King's Lynn and watching him in the second half, and it was just like he was down the park with his mates, wasn't yeah. it? It was almost it was just brilliant to watch, and he kind of carried that on tonight. And I was speaking to Chris Sutton on Sunday, and he made this point, and we kind of saw it after Maddison left as well. The fact that maybe he's been in, not in Buendia's shadow, but along those kind of lines, he's kind of been second fiddle, hasn't he, in terms of the creative outlet. You just wonder if he does stay beyond the end of the transfer window, and he is the main sort of attacking player in this side, the sort of ability that he's got, he can really relish under that, I think, and really grow into that role. And there's almost been a nice arrogance about him in pre-season, kind of like he's walking onto the pitch thinking he's the best player on there in a very positive way. And we know he's a confident lad. And there was a moment that we laughed at in the first half, I think it was before that overhead kick, where it was like karate kick, wasn't it?
And yeah. I said if he'd have got it wrong, he'd have looked a right prat.
Yeah, exactly. But that's him, isn't it? And that is kind of the joy of watching him play. And if you get that and you extract it in the Premier League, we already know what he can do from 2 years ago when he was probably one of Norwich City's better performers. He's 2 years along now, and I think that's a pretty exciting prospect going into the Premier League this time around, particularly if he is given all the love in the world to feel like he's the main guy, the star man. Then I think we could see a really, really good Todd Cantwell this year, a really productive Todd Cantwell. And I think we saw a Todd Cantwell that's enjoying his football, and that ultimately, I think, is the recipe for success with him.
Yeah, I think we saw a bit of that tonight as well, the love from the fans. At the end, he chucked his shirt to a kid in the crowd, didn't he? And that got a really nice reaction, and he was sort of going round applauding the fans in the stands, not in a goodbye way. I didn't read it in that element at all. But it felt like his performance tonight got quite a lot of love. So that saw them 2-0 up at half time. The only change at the break was that Angus Gunn came on for Tim Krul, which got a nice big cheer, as you would imagine. And then that third goal, if I come back to you on this, Connor, is it you sort of teed it up a little bit earlier about the sort of build up. In the end, it was a fairly simple finish to the goal, wasn't it? You knew this crossing for Rook, but just a bit of class. And I suppose it sort of showed how Gillingham were chasing shadows a lot of the night.
Yeah, and I think it showed the difference in quality, didn't it? And maybe Paddy referred to that midfield three. Maybe the difference this time around to last time, whereas they had a lengthy spell of possession, but they actually had the quality to cut through. And again, you have to put it in the context of the standard of the opposition they were facing. But that quality from Gilmore is something they simply didn't have 2 years ago in that role. And obviously, Yiannoulis' cross as well is pinpoint, and you've got a midfield sort of willing, a midfielder willing to break past the ball into the box to try and score a goal. And they did look like they had a bit more of a threat from midfield tonight. And again, putting that in all the context, but you've got Lee Malou, who's willing to shoot from range, as we saw with the first goal. Billy Gilmore with a couple of bursts in the box and a willingness to shoot from range. Lucas Rupp getting on the score sheet. So I think all of that is immensely positive. And it sort of shows, maybe when we speak about tweaking and lessons learned, maybe that midfield area is the big one. But that goal just was... I mean, if you watch football, you enjoy that goal, don't you? I think it was slick. It was aesthetically pleasing. It was just it was wonderful. And luckily, I think since Daniel Farke has been in charge, Norwich fans have had a few of those goals to enjoy. But that one, particularly given what we said earlier about the mood music and questions over quality, I think that probably answered a few of those questions. It was a really well sort of carved out goal, I thought.
Yeah, the midfield's really interesting. If Farker's going to play that three, then you'd have thought it's just a straight shootout between Rupp and McLean for the slot on the left, isn't it? Because Lees Malou and Gilmore, I think, will be pretty surprised if they're not starting against Liverpool on the opening day. The changes came pretty quickly after that goal. So Gibson basically got an hour in the tank, then was replaced by Zimmerman. Kenny McLean comes back from his injury, as Paddy mentioned earlier, that knee injury which kept him out of the Euros. He came on for Lees Malou, and Jacob Sorensen back from his COVID isolation. He replaced Lucas Rupp. So they were on for the last 25 minutes or so. The fourth goal came in the 73rd minute. Kieran Dowell teed up Adam Eder for a really good strike, wasn't it, Pad? And you asked Daniel Farker about Adam's progress in pre-season. That's four goals. He's the top scorer in pre-season stuff. And that was a good sign, the confidence that was behind that strike.
Instinctive, yeah, that finish back to goal, knows where the goal is, turn, hit, bang, top corner, instinctive, as I say, and that's what he's all about. And even the first goal, you know, as good as Cantwell's piece of skill was, it probably veers the other side of the post and out of play and a goal kick. If Eder's not got that predatory instinct inside the box to anticipate, that could happen, and he's there, and it's a simple volleyed finish then. But you have to be in the position. Actually, I did ask him, you're right, Dave, but his answer was, well, it was a bit puncturing the balloon, I think, because he more or less, I'd have to listen back to the complete answer, but it was more or less a dissection of the things that he needs to learn in his game rather than what he's showing, which, as Daniel, to be fair to him, did reference again, a natural born goal scorer. That's the label Daniel's attached to him. But, you know, there was three or four elements of his hold up play, his play with the back to goal, running into the channels, his awareness. And maybe that's Daniel's, you know, way with his younger players. I noted as well, because we had it last season, one of the games, final whistle, before he went round the four sides, there was a bit more of a word in the ear of Obama Daly as well, immediately on the final whistle. Not quite on the admonishment levels of, was it? I think it was the Huddersfield game, wasn't it? When they absolutely tonked him, and yet he still delivered what looked like a quite harsh coaching lesson on the final whistle that night. Maybe that's just Daniel, you know, just because Adam Eder is, as I say, making a few positive headlines and four goals, and maybe it's just, yeah, okay, we like what you're doing in front of goal, but, you know, there's still plenty of work to do in your game, and that's how he treats his young players. But in the absence of tonight, Pukki and Hugel, and that maybe bring us on to why they were absent, it's good to see, because, yes, they still would like, ideally, I think, probably to add one in that area of the pitch, but this could be a big season for Adam Eder. You know, he scored the first goal of Norwich's Championship season last season at Huddersfield. He scored the last one at Barnsley, but in between, it was injury, it was COVID again for him, and his season never really got going, and probably in terms of his development, you could call it a treading water campaign. And at his age now, he needs to really put his hand up and make that kind of leap that Max and Jamal and Ben Godfrey have done before him. And the talent's there, but obviously, you know, as Daniel said after the game, you know, there's elements of his game he still needs to round into, not just a pure finisher, but you certainly can see scenarios coming into this Premier League season now in certain games and certain settings. There's a guy who knows where the goal is, and every level of his club career, international, there's still a few question marks, I'm sure, but every level of his club career, he has scored goals, and there's nothing, I think, to suggest that he won't be able to do that at Premier League level. And if they can start getting goals from him in the Premier League, then you've got a seriously good player and another highly valued commodity on your hands as well, because strikers who score goals at Premier League level, you know, they go for a lot of money.
Yeah, he's still only 20, I think, isn't he? Yeah. You know, you think it feels like he's been around for quite a while, but he really needs a good run of games, doesn't he, now? And maybe he's going to have to be patient. Maybe he's going to have to force his way past Teemu Pukki. We'll have to see. But, yeah, just to finish off, the final goal, 89th minute, just to give the 10,000 fans a nice send-off into the night. A lovely free kick from Todd Cantwell out on the left wing. Lovely trajectory to it. And Jakob Sorensen able to power in the header from close range. And that's 5-0, and everybody goes home happy. All the boxes is ticked. A pretty perfect pre-season night overall. But if I come back to you, Pat, then on the COVID issues, I've got the list here, so I'll go through them. But the players not involved tonight were Pukki, Hanley, Bali Mumba, Poheta, Hernandez, Hugill and Rashica. If you take up the story from there, I mean, I thought there was almost a nice line from Daniel, wasn't there, when he joked that, well, at least most of my players have had COVID now, so hopefully they won't get it again.
that's looking exceedingly on the positive side of it, yeah, because that might be the case. But Connor, you did point out, I mean, Bali Mumba, I think, had it last season as well. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they won't get it again if they had it. But all joking aside, yeah, those seven plus Jakob Sorensen and Angus Gunn, who had it prior to the Huddersfield game, had to self-isolate and only came back into the group yesterday, Monday. So that was nine players. And then Daniel added two more, the two fullbacks tonight, Max Aarons and Demetris Yiannoulis. Didn't have symptoms, didn't test positive, but were deemed maybe close contacts and had to isolate as well. So in total, 11 of Norwich's players over the course of this pre-season period of COVID-related absences. And as Daniel said, you know, on various levels, yes, of course, the health of the players and their families is paramount. But in terms of the disruption, it's wreaked on Norwich's pre-season. We all know two games were cancelled last week, two proposed friendlies, a mini training camp up north as well. That had to be, shelved as well. And Daniel's phrase tonight, which stood with me after the game, was it could be a bumpy start to Premier League season because again, with the greatest respect to Gillingham, I don't think that's really going to battle hard in Norwich for when Liverpool come to town, or Man City away the following week, or then Leicester at home, and Arsenal in the mix as well, aren't they? I think so. I think we have to accept that this is probably going to have quite a detrimental impact in terms of Norwich's start to the season, which was already hellishly tough if you look at the fixtures, because to have at any given time 11 players and frontline players in a lot of cases, you know, Grant Hanley tonight, Timu Pukki, both of those would be shoo-ins, you think, for Liverpool, certainly the two fullbacks, and Rashica, yeah, you know, the big money summer signing as well. So it's a very, very difficult situation. Norwich, of course, have experience of it. They had at various points of last season to deal with these issues, and they found a way. And you know, to take Daniel's point there, he said that they've tested, obviously, daily subsequently, and there's been no recent cases, so they hope it's behind them now, at least this wave of it. But and he also made the point, you know, Norwich aren't alone in terms of there are Premier League clubs who are having to deal with either COVID issues in terms of the camp or a disrupted pre-season impact. I think Chelsea had to shelve a tour to America, if I'm not mistaken, because of
Arsenal did. Man United Arsenal? Have had to cancel one.
So it's there, and as everybody in every walk of life are having to live with it, why would Norwich City as a professional football club be immune from it? But that amount of players disrupted. I mean, he picked out Timu, and he said Timu came back late anyway because of the Euros, and he had, you know, extra time off, was in training for 3 or 4 days, and now he's had to isolate for 10 days. What sort of preparation is that for him to be leading the line against Liverpool? But that's the cards that have been dealt, and Norwich are having to sort of play them hand as best they can. But hopefully, Daniel said, of those 7 who missed tonight, he didn't put a number on it, but he said there'll be a few of those who will have served their isolation period by the time we get to Saturday, and we should see them at Newcastle. So hopefully we've turned the corner. But I think my concern, and certainly from reading between the lines, his concern is what impact this will have on the start of the Premier League season.
Yeah, and if they haven't got symptoms, as long as they're not ill, which we presume most of them won't be, we presume most of the squad are going to be, at least have had their first jab and things like that, they'll still be able to carry on with their cardio work, won't they? They'll be on the exercise bike, they'll be on the rowing machine, whatever it is, at home or wherever that is possible for them to carry on their fitness work. It's just they're not going to be able to do football-specific stuff, are they? Or not too much of it anyway. Who knows, if the soccer bot had been there sooner, maybe they could have done that in isolation or something. Yeah. Who knows? But it's an awkward situation, and that takes us on to Newcastle. But before we go on to that, there was one I just wanted to come back to, Connor, on Omar Bamadeli. What you thought of him tonight? We were saying during the game, weren't we, that he looks like he's probably had another growth spurt. He looks like he's definitely been doing the work in the gym. He looks like a professional centre-back now, doesn't he? He's filled out, and he was chosen ahead of Zimmerman tonight. I don't know if we can read too much into that, but if things don't go well for Hanley, he's in the mix for selection, isn't he? He's still 18, isn't he? I don't think he's had his 19th yet.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it, how young he is and how developed he is at this stage. I think if we compare him to Ben Godfrey, who's probably the most recent example, I think he's well ahead in terms of development than what Godfrey was at that age. And what struck me really about tonight compared to maybe his performances at the end of last season was his work on the ball. I thought he was very good. There were a couple of switches of play that he put straight to the feet of Dimitri Yiannoulis or other players, and had Gibson alongside him as well, sort of coaching him through it. There are a couple of shouts, we haven't heard it for a while, a couple of shouts of the northeastern accent higher. I won't do an impression. But obviously working with Hanley, Gibson, Zimmerman as well, I'll throw into that. I think he's got three really good players to learn off at this stage. Not necessarily in terms of ability, because he's in a very good place there anyway, but in terms of mentally, in terms of tactically, pad reference and stuff with Daniel Farke. I mean, it's a coach who's got a brilliant track record in terms of bringing through youth. So in this environment, he looks very good. And I think it is going to be kind of, it could potentially be a throw him in the cold water job against Liverpool and see how he gets on. And that could really be a test to see how far and how ready he is for the Premier League. And I think all the signs so far and the signs tonight, and again, with the context of the opposition, were positive, and Newcastle, I guess, will be a really good test for him. If he does start there against Premier League opposition, he does do well, then that might be enough to convince Daniel to give him a start against Liverpool next week. And I think, considering where he's come from and how quickly that development has accelerated, it's a remarkable story, really. And like you say, he looks to have got taller, looks to have filled out a bit more, really aggressive in his defensive work, looks like a defender that just really loves to defend, but capable of playing as well as you need to in a Daniel Farke team. So I think there's a lot to like there, and at this stage I don't think we can rule him out starting against Liverpool. Obviously Hanley, one of the players missing tonight, we don't know if he'll be back for Liverpool or not, but if there is an opening there, then who knows, he could take that, perform really well against Liverpool, and then off you go in the Premier League. And you speak about Adam Eder for expensive commodities. You see Mark Gay has just gone to Palace for 18 million, having not really played a game in the Premier League. If he gets a season of Premier League football under his belt and really impresses, then that's going to be another asset that Norwich City have managed to create.
Absolutely, and there were two really strong headers, I remember, in the first half, which I thought were pretty impressive for a lad his age, because he was determined to beat his man to them as well. But that was, that was pretty impressive. Right, before we turn our attention to the Newcastle game, I spoke to Billy Gilmore after the game. Very impressive speaker, as you can imagine, coming through the Chelsea Academy and already being a Scotland international. Yeah, that England game when he was such a thorn in their side, and that what was a thoroughly disappointing result for England, but a very, very positive night for Scotland as they frustrated the old enemy. But yeah, here's a little taste of what Billy Gilmore had to say. If I take you back to that England game a bit then, and the amount of hype that was around you, that everybody was talking about you all of a sudden. How did you sort of keep your head on your shoulders at that time?
I was just really looking forward to going out and play. I knew it was a hype about me coming into Scotland squad to play, but just stuck to my position, do what I know what I'm good at on the pitch. And to be honest, in that match, we created a lot of chances and done well, and overall it was a good night there.
So coming to Norwich, presumably you will have had plenty of options on your plate this summer. And how much did you speak to Thomas Tuchel about this? Because obviously he's a man that knows Daniel Farke very well in terms of style of play and things like that.
I knew when the season finished, I wanted to go on loan. I wanted to come and get experience, more game time playing in week in, week out, and to do it to get it in the Premier League was even better. So for me to come here, I'm really excited, and the boss has been brought with me so far.
He just said he was very pleased with you tonight, that he felt like your positioning was better than earlier in pre-season and that you were calm and controlled. So that's the sort of thing you want to be hearing at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still learning the style of play, a lot different, of course, but I'm understanding it well and picking up quick.
How do you feel the squad has dealt with everything that's happened in this last couple of weeks? You, as you just spoke about with Chris, you know all about the COVID side of things, but how's the spirit in the squad considering you've got this challenge ahead of what we're, 10 days away from the opening game?
Yeah, I mean, everyone was gutted, so it was, because we had basically no players. We had to cancel a few games, and not pre-season, the best way to get fit is to play games, so we were struggling, but on the training pitch, we've been top notch. I mean, the boss has worked us really hard, and we're doing the extra miles in training, making sure we're doing it right for stuff like tonight, because tonight you wouldn't look at us and say we had 2 weeks without a game or something. So it's really good workout from us.
Pretty close to a goal tonight as well.
Yeah, a few. I was Jamie coming, I played for Chelsea, so I was kind of raging I never scored, to be honest. Should have hit the target, but no, good one overall and good performance from the boys.
Welcome to the new normal.
Hello, and welcome to this series of Unfinished with me, Charles Thompson.
Welcome to Weird Norfolk.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast.
From true crime to football, politics to folklore, for more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Right, Pad, on St James's Park then. And as you've teed up already, hopefully some of those players are back. But if we look at the bench tonight, you know, Jonathan Tomkinson, Daniel Adshead, both on there. I think there was only 7 players on the bench, wasn't there? So they need some players back to have much option to play a team different to tonight, really. But Newcastle and Steve Bruce, I think their sort of surge towards survival at the end of last season was based on a 3 at the back, wasn't it? And they had great success with that. Jacob Murphy as a right wing back. We might see Jamal Lewis, of course, as well on Saturday. But that is going to be a totally, totally different test tonight. And we're going to be really looking for some clues for that Liverpool game in that one, aren't we?
Just when you said Jamal, the first thing that popped into my head is Max Aarons and him are going to be duelling down that flank. That's going to be some battle, that. Luton products.
Max was a bit edgy tonight as well, wasn't he? He got a bit knocked off with someone.
He wasn't happy. Yeah, I don't know if it was the same guy, but there was one episode in the first half just in front of the Gillingham dugout where I think, you know, he got a bit of a flea in his ear from well, I nearly said rather a derogatory term about Steve Evans' weight, but I'll stop myself. I think it might have been their captain left a bit on him, so I don't know whether that was a hangover from that. But yeah, it got a bit spicy in the second half. He needed a few cool heads around him in green and yellow. But that will be quite. I'm sure those two will be having plenty of banter on the pitch if it turns out that they're in direct competition. And as you say, Jacob as well, who seems to, well, he's got that fat new contract in his back pocket, and he's clearly had a bit of a revival on Tyneside, having looked like he was maybe sort of surplus to requirements. But
wasn't it a 6-year contract?
By all accounts, yeah, not quite Pardew levels, but not far off. And Sam Maximan, I haven't really followed their. I think they got beat at Burnley, if I'm not mistaken. I think I was on the Newcastle website earlier. I think they might have got beat there on Friday night. But I don't know about who's fit and who's not. But he's a special talent as well, and there's no doubt. As it is for Norwich, I'm assuming Newcastle don't have another game going into their Premier League opener. So you would think they will be as close to full strength as they can be. So that will be a considerable step up from what we've seen here tonight. And they certainly do need a few of those frontline options. But hopefully, as I say, we have no clues to the identity of the ones who will be available. But if, say, Timu was available, I think he comes in for Adam and probably Grant Hanley. Well, but off the back of what Connor was saying, I think Daniel will have a bit of a dilemma there, whether you drop Obama Daly out to accommodate Hanley, but that would be the pragmatic choice, because I think you would expect, if Hanley and Gibson are fit, they start against Liverpool. So they need game time together. And does Kenny McLean get a start? Because I'm sure he's in Daniel's thoughts for Liverpool. So, yeah, I mean, in the limited options, he might have to change it. I don't think we will see too much different from that starting lineup on Saturday. And there's no doubt that will be a stiffer test. And, maybe a more realistic benchmark of where Norwich are and where they're a bit short going into the Liverpool game.
Yeah, I mean, if we saw a three from the start on Saturday, I think that would be a massive indication, wouldn't it, that we're probably looking at that for the Liverpool game. And the thing that's in my mind, particularly at the moment, is that the Liverpool game, I think, we saw tonight, there'll be a huge amount of adrenaline behind it, won't there? There will be, they'll go for the jugular. They'll go for that sort of Manchester City occasion of two years ago, won't they? They'll be hoping they can pull off that sort of classic newly promoted team, just have so much enthusiasm and confidence behind it that they manage to pull off a shock result. The one that scares me is the one that follows, which is Manchester City away, which is an incredibly difficult game, isn't it? Hopefully there'll be some Norwich away following, but we don't know how that's going to work out yet. So, yeah, it's going to be a real search for clues at Newcastle, I think, isn't it? And, yeah, I think you also have got to bear in mind that you've got to get, if Hanley is available to play, you've got to get him a start, haven't you? And Pukki likewise.
Yeah, I think you do, absolutely. Particularly given what we've kind of spoken about and the pre-season situation, it's now going to be an acceleration to get sort of minutes into legs, isn't it, ahead of that opening game. And any minutes you can get into those returning players' legs before next weekend is going to be crucial, particularly given how thin the squad was tonight. And in terms of shape, it's going to be fascinating because we've spoken quite a lot on various things we've done about how maybe the signings have lent towards what we saw tonight, which is kind of a 4-3-3, but maybe slightly different. If they do go back to playing a three at Newcastle, then maybe we're seeing kind of two plans being put in place. The one tonight where maybe games that they feel they can dominate the ball, and then maybe you've got one a game plan for when they go away and maybe don't have so much of the ball and have to dig in and be a bit more pragmatic. That's maybe the direction it's heading. So it's going to be interesting to see how they line up in that regard. And as you mentioned, it is their final pre-season friendly, so you would imagine Daniel will be looking to get a look at as close to the starting 11 against Liverpool as humanly possible, obviously with the various COVID things in place. So it's going to be a real test, positive, and also I think we're going to be able to take a lot from it in terms of how Norwich are going to line up the following week. So even though it's maybe a bit bizarre in terms of them playing someone in the league, it's maybe not the worst thing in the world in terms of gauging the quality, and also maybe for a few players as well to understand the level before the real stuff starts. But it's going to be a really interesting, educational probably trip to the Northeast, and particularly in front of fans at St James's Park. I mean, we mentioned it today, but that's going to be the first time they're going to play in front of an away crowd for some time since Luton, I think in December, if I'm not mistaken. So that's going to be something else that they need to cry and channel. They've had it going for them tonight. It's going to be against them on Saturday. It doesn't seem like there's going to be any away fans either, so there's that element to it. And all of those things, I think, will add up to a good test and probably the friendly that Daniel Farker will be able to extract the most from, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it was probably that Burnley game you've mentioned, Pad, but I think Newcastle were booed off at half-time in one of their pre-season friendlies, weren't they? And I don't think they've gone too well. I saw they took 3,000 to Doncaster, which isn't the longest trip in the world. I suppose it's, a couple of hours from Newcastle. But, we know what their crowd are like when they get going, but it's not going to be 56,000, I wouldn't have thought, on Saturday, is it? I almost loathe to mention transfers, Pad, really. It's quite nice to have football to talk about because we had these two games pulled away at quite short notice last week, didn't we? And then I think that has played into a lot of gnashing of teeth and nerves and people maybe overanalyzing and not okay, no, maybe overanalyzing it is unfair. I think it is fair for some Norwich fans to be getting a bit nervous about the fact that we haven't seen more additions yet because we are now into the final 30 days of the transfer window, August 30th. We all, I think, are in pretty wide agreement that Norwich still need at least, say, two or three more additions to that squad, and then people can start to feel that bit more relaxed about their prospects and stuff. But I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit because I didn't hear all of Daniel's interview because I had to go off and interview Billy, didn't I? But yeah. Were there any sort of hints from Daniel in terms of what he's still looking for and whether they're close to anything?
Well, I mean, on that vibe, which is discernible depending on what quarters of social media you look, that there is a frustration almost tipping into rising panic that Norwich aren't doing the business they need to. I mean, Lees Malou is the last senior player that came through the door, and that was mid-July. We're now into August. So I put that point to Daniel post-match, and he basically said, yeah, of course, you know, both him and Weber would like to be getting this business done earlier, but following on from what Stuart said to us in this very room, actually, when Daniel's contract was formally announced two weeks back, this market is a very jittery market in general at the minute, and there are clubs, and we don't need to reference the players because we all know who we're talking about, but there's players that Norwich would like to bring in, and the valuations of said clubs for said players at this moment are not where Norwich are and won't be tempting Norwich to go beyond their means or even pay inflated figures for players who they value substantially less. And Daniel kind of touched on that again this evening, I thought, and almost said, look, we'd like to do the business soon as. I'd like these players in the door by Liverpool, ideally, but the reality is they might have to just sit on their hands and let the clock tick down ever closer to deadline day, which is the end of August. It's nearly thick end of 3.5 weeks away. And then if those players are still at those clubs and they've not been able to shift them, there's probably going to be a bit more pragmatism, I think, come into valuations, and then Norwich will look to maybe push the button on one or two. I think it's safe to say that they're fairly confident at this stage. The Greek lad they've been linked with, Zolis, the 19-year-old, who I know was involved with Pauk this evening, funnily enough, in Ireland in their Europa Conference League game. Have I got that Mouse competition, right?
Qualifier, I think.
Which I believe they've lost that first leg. I think he came on. By all accounts, that they are pretty confident that they're closing in on that player, and you know, I'm sure that will get a very favourable response from Norwich fans because he's a 19-year-old, but you know, the clubs he's been linked with and the numbers he's producing, albeit in the Greek first division, are very exciting. So that looks like the most likely one to come over the line next. The Brandon Williams one, the Manchester United link, I don't think that's particularly far advanced. Yes, he's a player they like, but I don't think he's one they're actively in the final stages of trying to do something. I think at the minute it's all about getting Zolis over the line, and I think barring any last-minute hitches, they're pretty confident that will happen. Time will tell, but I would say certainly if it goes to plan, it'll be well in advance of Liverpool. So, you know, that hopefully will assuage some of the fears that Norwich aren't getting the business done they need to get done. And just to sign off on that, Daniel's parting shot this evening on that point was, you know, judge us again. When the window closes, he is supremely confident they will have done the business they need and that squad will be far better equipped to achieve what they all hope they can, which is to stay in the Premier League first and foremost, and then build from there.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen Philip Billing as well. His name hasn't gone away because, you know, we know Norwich like him. He's been one of these where if there's a deal in their wheelhouse that they can afford, then they would like to sign Philip Billing. And maybe what we saw tonight, that shape, that 4-3-2-1, he would fit very nicely into, you've got sort of two number 10s there, haven't you, in that sort of role. And that's where he had his success last year. And he's got that physicality, hasn't he? He's got size on his side. So whether that is one that they can bring back round and Bournemouth do end up looking to do business there, that sounds like it's going to be tied pretty closely to whether they can sell Arnaud Danjuma, who scored that brilliant goal here, of course, at the end of last season and is their star asset. If they get 25 million for him, then they probably don't need to sell Philip Billing, do they? So I think that's one similarly where Norwich just having to be patient, aren't they? Well, you know, Stuart Webber has made it very clear that they are being patient and that they're having to be patient. But yeah, just finally, Connor, I suppose it comes down to trusting Webber, doesn't it? You know, if they don't get Billing, then you've got to trust that the next one down on the list, that he's, you know, he's got the right target in mind. If Villa turn up with 35 million for Cantwell or whatever, because Grealish has gone to Manchester City for however much stupid money has been talked about, £100 million, then you've got to trust Webber is going to have that target ready to go. He's going to know exactly what he's going to do with that money. And probably if he does sell Todd for that sort of massive fee, if that's where things end up going in the next few weeks, then it's not going to be one player. From a Norwich point of view, you'd have thought you'd get two or three very good players that could really impact a newly promoted club.
Yeah, exactly that. I think there's so much to pan out, isn't there? And I know that is probably quite scary for people with 3.5 weeks to go, because that uncertainty isn't really something that's existed since Stuart Webber's come in. All of the squad has been by and large together by that opening game of the season, so they've had a period of bedding in, and I think we just need to accept that these are kind of uncharted waters, both for football generally in terms of the impact of COVID, and clubs maybe digging their heels in and maybe not realising the mess that they'll be in. I mean, we could list several Championship clubs at the moment who are really struggling financially. Off the top of my head, obviously the mess that Derby are in, Reading as well are embargoed. So these clubs maybe...
Sheffield Wednesday,
there are various examples of where clubs maybe could have sold assets, didn't, and have really paid the price for that. So, yeah, you have to kind of be patient and wait for things to fall into place. And I get the frustration, because everyone wants that squad looking as ready as it can before Liverpool. But ultimately, as Pad mentioned there, it's going to be a very difficult start anyway, not just because of their fixture list, because of kind of the mitigating circumstances of this pre-season, which has been stop-start. Obviously, the transfer activity not being as swift as they'd like, but I think they were prepared for that. So I don't think this is an unexpected pause. I think this is one they're anticipating. And I think you can only, at this stage, take them for their word and sort of await judgment until kind of August the 31st, after the window's closed, and we'll see what sort of nick the squad is in there. We'll have an international break, won't we, around then as well, so it'd be a good opportunity for the whole squad then to really get together and then attack the Premier League before Christmas. So I get the frustration, but I think, you know, all being well, and Daniel's reiterated that tonight, they'll have a stronger squad with more additions come the end of the month, and that ultimately is the priority. The worst thing would be just getting players in for the sake of getting players in that weren't right. And I think, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, those targets moved on a bit quicker than maybe they hoped, and they went down the list a bit quickly and maybe weren't patient enough because they wanted that squad together. And again, we talk about lessons learned. If you want to avoid a repeat of what happened 2 years ago, you have to do things differently. And maybe this is something they've reflected upon and are keen to do differently. So let's wait and see. But, you know, this Greek leg sounds exciting. That would hopefully kickstart a bit more excitement and add a bit more quality into their squad ahead of the Premier League opener.
Yeah, Jolis had a phenomenal season last year, didn't he? So he does look like he could be an exciting addition to things. But you can understand people getting a little bit jumpy, and Stuart Webber knows full well if that squad isn't looking up to Premier League standard on the start of September, 1st of September, then he knows that he's going to be getting flack if the results aren't falling in the right way for Norwich at the start of the season. But hopefully that's everything covered. It's closing on midnight, so I think we're pretty lucky that we haven't been kicked out of Carrow Road already. So we'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, pinken.com is the place to go for all the reaction and analysis of tonight's 5-0 win over Gillingham. We'll keep you up to date with all the latest ahead of that game against Newcastle on Saturday. We'll have Window Watch back in its usual slot, 1 p.m. Friday afternoon, where we'll zero in on all those transfer lines that a little bit more. But for now, a very, very enjoyable night. Good for the football soul. 10,000 fans back at Carrow Road, singing on the Ball City, enjoying those celebratory waves with Daniel Farke after a 5-0 pre-season win.